Welcome to HB's Emerging Issues in Litigation podcast, or the Emerging Litigation Issues podcast. I don't think I've settled on the name yet. So welcome to this experience. This is done in collaboration with Fastcase and Law Street Media and my company, HB Litigation Conferences. And together we're producing the new journal on emerging issues in litigation, which is coming out in January 2021. And one of those, one of the articles in the first issue is called "Crisis is the Mother of Change: How a Pandemic Sparked Progress in Courtroom Efficiency." And it is written by Allison Besunder, and or Allison Besunder. I told her I would mispronounce her name, and I am a man of my word. She talks in the article about, obviously secondary to causing serious illness and obviously the tragic and massive loss of life, the COVID-19 pandemic has forced people the world over to make adjustments to their way of life. The courts are no exception. You just heard my wife sneeze in the background. No relation. I mean, related to me, but not related to the subject. So anyway, people have been compelled to reckon with persistent systemic and operational inefficiencies as a result of this. And this is particularly the case with state courts, she writes. The pandemic has shone a spotlight on outdated technological infrastructure, both for courts and law firms alike, and many of which found their systems woefully inadequate to meet the needs of full-time remote teams. State court processing efficiencies vary from state to state, locality to locality, as well as by function of each court, and also is impacted by case volumes. Even before the onset of the pandemic, many courts faced backlogs due to slow processing. These inefficiencies increase clients' fees, they interfere with access to justice and badly needed dispute resolution services in the commercial and contractual area. So it started a waterfall of change in the state court systems. And as she writes, as with the dust heap of dictaphones, who most people probably don't know what those are, fax machines and carbon copy paper, people definitely don't know what that is. COVID-19 forced the whole industry, which was very comfortable to the way it always had been done, and jettisoned us all into the deep end of the pool, the future. And it left us with little choice but to adapt, and adapt we are. And some of us are more successful than others, as we'll talk. I'm going to jump right to the interview with Allison Besunder. And as I said, she's a partner in the Manhattan office of Getz Fitzpatrick LLP. And she concentrates on commercial litigation, guardianships, and estate litigation in surrogates court. So you'll hear along the way some, in addition to some of the insights that she shared on court efficiencies and inefficiencies, how some of this can actually be good. Some of the new communication tools and everything can also be good for marriage and raising children. And I'm sure I diverted the conversation in other directions too. That's how I do it. So here it is, Allison Besunder. Allison, so thank you for speaking with me today.
Happy to be here.
You write in the article that it should be clear to the legal profession that the new normal is here to stay. For all the enthusiasm some people feel about the long-awaited shift, like avoiding, wasting time commuting, you note that some people spend as many as 54 hours per year commuting, which sounds conservative for some people. So a lot of time wasted to get to a 10-minute conference, but there are also some irritants attendant to working from home, and litigating from home is no different. What's your outlook for the judicial system?
Well, my hope is that the judicial system uses this as an opportunity for change. I know that in New York, with the help of Jana DeFiore, who has a vision of using this as that very opportunity, that they have made leaps and bounds into using technology in such a way that really has streamlined the courts. They've gotten rid of motion backlog. They have adapted to Teams. You know, at first they used Skype, that wasn't working. They pivoted to use Teams, which is helping And you can see already that things are much more streamlined in terms of going from conference to conference and cutting down on, you know, the hassle of if you had to go to a county that was 50 miles away, now you could just hop on a Teams call and have done three conferences in, you know, three different counties in a single day. So I think the outlook for the judicial system, if they use this, they use this change to catapult them into the future, that it will make litigation more accessible, less expensive for clients, and certainly more efficient. And I think the great benefit of that is going to be reducing stress for lawyers.
Yeah, we can always use less stressed lawyers. And you know, 50 miles or whatever in New York or in Los Angeles or any other densely populated place, that's not just 50 minutes. I can be quite a ways.
That's right. And even and I will say, even within New York City and the five boroughs of the city, you know, if you have to go from Brooklyn to the Bronx, or, you know, getting stuck on a subway, even though it could be 12 miles, it could be an hour and a half. So there's an unpredictability of that as well.
Right. And if you're not from New York and get on the wrong train, like I have, you end up in completely the wrong borough and you miss meetings.
Or even if you're from New York and you're just listening to your podcast on your iPhone and lose track of where you're going.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's no easy U-turn when you're taking a train. So you discuss some of the pandemic's effects, both positive and negative, and prospects for this new normal in litigation. You also pose some ideas for courts and practitioners to consider as they improve their response to the situation and prepare for the future. What can you tell us about that?
Well, I think the first thing is, at least on the court system side, to adapt to the technology. I think the technology can both reduce the budget that they need to operate the court system, which is obviously a lot, that it helps facilitate speed and better communication. And so the training of court staff to use technology to better process motions and, you know, what was formerly big stacks of paper, there has been a huge push, at least from my experience and my practice, to expand electronic filing, which really had taken hold in the state system, but not in a lot of areas. So, for example, in surrogates court, e-filing is now, you know, everything is being e-filed. You know, some guardianship matters, which were not because of privacy concerns. So that's number one. Number two, I think there's going to be a greater increase in paying attention to cybersecurity. And I'm on the New York State Bar Association Technology Committee, which has been very active in general, but particularly during COVID, in putting out white papers and resources on what practitioners need to do to ensure security. Law firms have more and more become targets of hackers because of the personal information and client data that they retain. And so firms, big and small, whether you're a solo or a large firm, you really need to keep paying attention to your cybersecurity. And the offshoot of that is that now you have people and employees who are remote working at all different levels of education and cybersecurity awareness. You know, they're not in a Starbucks on the Starbucks Wi-Fi, but nevertheless, they're at home, they're on their personal computers. And I think all lawyers really need to focus on what is their protocol, revisit it, communicate it to their employees to make sure that they are not susceptible to those kinds of hacking attacks while everybody is, you know, out in remote locations and not in one centralized location.
Yeah, hackers do love law firms. When anybody thinks about all of the intellectual property that's being discussed and deals that are being discussed and certainly private information. Yeah. Hackers love law firms. And there have been some big headline attacks on some major law firms over time. You mentioned Teams, which I don't know if everybody knows, that's Microsoft Teams. And so I thought it was, at first, and I'm experiencing this now, so many people are using Zoom. And it seems like Zoom came out of absolutely nowhere. But I do know that initially, at least, there were some security issues with Zoom, with court proceedings getting hacked while they were in progress. And I am seeing... What's that?
Zoom bombing.
Yes, Zoom bombing. Yeah, there's even a word for it. And I am seeing firms using Teams more and more, you know, maybe in certainly Microsoft. If anybody's going to be buttoned down on security, it would be Microsoft. So yeah, I am seeing that used more and more. But it is funny, even when we do webinars, people are asking me, oh, I want to have my own background, because Zoom offers those kinds of bells and whistles. And
well, so does Teams. I've become a master of the backgrounds.
Yes,
I cheer myself up when I'm doing these. So, but Microsoft does have that too. I will say that, and I don't have any, you know, relation to Microsoft. So, at the risk of it sounding like a shameless plug, I have found Microsoft Teams to be indispensable, not just because of the court conferences, but internally, because it's almost like having my team on my laptop or my desktop, no matter where I am. I can buzz them, video. It's just easier with the chat. So I'm not, after a while, email becomes clunky. It's a lot easier to just shoot a chat message. And a lot of it is the user interface. So you don't have that capability on Zoom. I have made it key to my practice since Hurricane Sandy of the ability to operate remotely just in case the subways are shut down or you can't get to your office. And back in 2012, we didn't have these tools for sure. And it obviously was a much shorter period of time. But I think part of the challenge for lawyers is that, and it's an intergenerational problem, whether young or old, people have different levels of comfort with technology and they like doing things the way that they've always done them. So I think that ability to adapt and maybe take it slowly but surely and to maybe implement and incorporate these technological tools into your practice, because it can be life-changing in a good way if you let them. But I think it is hard for a lot of people to adapt in that way.
Yeah. Well, I'll second your testimonial for Microsoft, because I've met people from Microsoft and I have to tell them sometimes, I bet you guys hear a lot of complaints. I have to tell you, your stuff is amazing, because I'll jump from Planner, which I use to organize events, and that integrates with Teams, and the things you can do with PowerPoint, you can actually make movies out of PowerPoint stuff. So anyway, yeah, there's all of our plugs for Microsoft. Way to go. They're big for a reason. And now I don't know if this next one is redundant, but I'll just go ahead and ask, you discuss remote workers collaborating. That's what you're talking about with Teams, and then keeping a distance when they are working in the same place. What are some of the ways you see improving on how we're doing things? So, like I said, maybe jumping off from Teams, but you had some other things that you shared in the article.
Yeah, I think, so much of what we do is communication, whether that's written communication, whether that's, verbal communication over the phone, in person. I think it has highlighted for me how much of our communication is in fact nonverbal or being in person, and how much you pick up on that from being in person. And so there is, I think that's also a challenge for people who rely on that a lot. I think even, it's funny when we were talking about Teams, even when my team and I are in the office, we're still on Teams because we still have to be separated. So I think it's just a matter of, it's the mental shift of remaining connected, not just through the technology or whether you're in person or remote, but really figuring out ways to remain connected so that the work doesn't suffer, so that you're staying on track. And that varies from team to team and person to person, right? I think it's a matter of being flexible, listening to your team and what they need, having an open line of communication to say, like, is this working for you? Is it not? And being nimble and ready to pivot with those things. So I think those are some of the things that has helped my practice in remote collaboration. But there are other people that are in securities work, a very paper heavy work, and it doesn't as much, lend itself to that as much.
Right. Yeah. And as a guy who is whose wife is his partner in business and we work in the same place, I can tell you it's also good for marriage to be communicating through Teams and things like that. I hear divorce lawyers are really busy right now. I hope that's not true.
So that is a fact. Every matrimonial attorney I speak with, and much the same, some of that translates to work environments, right? We're in an extended period of time of a high level of stress, and that does not go bode well for anyone. You can only sustain at that level for so long. And litigators know that, right? We thrive on stress to a certain extent, but everyone has their breaking point. Mm-hmm. And I think for a lot of marriages, as one matrimonial attorney said to me, you know, a lot of people were just kind of going along and they didn't see their spouse that much, except maybe in the morning, a little bit at night. And everybody really brings to the surface, you know, being with everybody all that time in one space. So it has been a business boon for matrimonial attorneys.
Yeah. Okay. I've just personally, I've never noticed how often my wife comments on how I do things. It's like I've said that to her. I said, "Do you ever notice that it's like you're the critic and I'm like a bad movie?" And we're
as the joke goes, it's like the longer that you're in quarantine, you start to hear how people chew their food, and that's when you know you need to get out.
Thank God for our headphones. All right, so you also talked about the impact the pandemic's had on the litigation practice itself and litigation. Is litigation up or down? And what about the ways attorneys are litigating? What can you tell us about that?
Well, I think, you know, in the article, I have a lot of statistics about it. I think it depends on the practice area. You know, I like to joke, I never really had my sourdough starter moment. I was constantly busy through COVID and the beginning, you know, the quarantine. I think there's certain litigation that is down. So for example, again, using New York as an example, there's been a moratorium on commercial and residential landlord-tenant disputes for eviction, right? So when that moratorium is lifted, there is going to be a flood of litigation of that nature. And so that, I think, is going to, it's certainly going to clog up a lot of things in the courts, but I am hopeful and I'm optimistic that they're anticipating that. And that's probably why the moratorium has been, you know, also in place, but I speculate on that. Like you said, I mean, I know we're talking about commercial litigation, matrimonial litigation. So all of those you have to look at in terms of how the court's going to be handling those sorts of things. On the commercial litigation side, again, in New York, they had started to conduct some jury trials, at least via Zoom or virtually. And they had started to be doing some in-person trials, but I believe those were only criminal, that they were prioritizing those. There may or may not have been one or two commercial cases, but in the upstate areas. That has now been pulled back because of the uptick in the cases. And they are really encouraging a lot more alternative dispute resolution mechanisms, mediation. On most of the webinars that I've been in, both at the federal and the state level, they are really promoting their internal mediation programs. And, you know, it's, you know, as you said, necessity is the mother of invention, right? It's certainly encouraging clients to understand that either they can try an ADR mediation program, or they could be waiting until easily 2022, 2023, or even into 2024 before they get a trial date. And I think that goes for, you know, bench trials as well as jury trials. So you have a couple of decisions to make there that, just by definition of what the realities are, it's going to force clients to really take a hard look at what they've been doing. And I think with that comes some litigation fatigue, right? I mean, my own personal opinion, after a couple of years, you know, maybe not as much in pure commercial disputes, but clients have a tendency to get dug in, right? And the longer they've been in litigation, the more they've spent on litigation, the harder it becomes to resolve it. So there is, I think, a hope, certainly on the court side, and I think within the industry of commercial and civil litigation, that hopefully this will force more resolution of matters in a way that's good for us and it's good for clients.
So the virtual trials where they've had juries, how have you seen those work from a practical standpoint? I mean, I've heard stories that there are mixed reviews on those.
So I can't speak to, I can speak to an evidentiary hearing that I was prepared for and participated in, and although it got resolved probably for this reason, and a deposition. So, how does it go? It's a little bit clunky, right? And even before COVID, I've done remote depositions. You have to really be prepared with your exhibits, have them uploaded, have them ready to go virtually. It's a lot easier when in a deposition, I can simply hand the document to the witness. I have my pile and I can go through it. It's a totally different, it's a different animal when you're doing it remotely. And you have to really think through the mechanics of how am I going to show this to the witness? Do I want them to have copies in front of them? You always have to make the tactical decision of, do you want to, you know, lawyers don't, they like to hold it close to their vest. They don't want to give the store away in advance, but in a virtual world, you kind of have to. And the truth is by the time you get to trial, there are no smoking guns anymore. Everybody should know what the documents are and what's going to be presented. So whether it's in a deposition or a trial, I think a good practice tip is to have the court reporter have all the PDFs, have them labeled in terms of your, you know, you have them marked for identification, maybe send the judge an actual binder of the documents, which I like to do for trial anyway, so that they have it in front of them. That just makes it more efficient. So all of those things are some of just the basic tips of trying to conduct it. And obviously, you know, the basics of making sure your Wi-Fi works, the electric works. I mean, those are the things that you don't really think about, and you can have a snag without, if your Wi-Fi goes out. But you know, some of it is not, you can't replicate, you know, just the general sense you have of a witness in person, that's going to be very hard to do. You're not going to know if your witness is getting texted from your opposing counsel or, you know, even in the Zoom and the chat privately. And my own practice has been to make them swear under oath that they're not going to be doing that so right. that you have that to go back to.
Right. And then juror conduct. I mean, I know that I talked to a gentleman who he was a defense attorney and it was supposed to, I think it was the first asbestos case that went to a trial or into jury. And he said that he had, you know, one juror was doing her laundry. Another guy's computer failed. So the next day he was on his phone, but he was lying in bed. I mean, it wasn't anything, you know, he's clothed and everything, but he was in bed. It was obvious he was lying down and looking up at his phone. So I don't know if he had like Captain America pillowcases or whatever, but it was obvious he was in bed. So it was just sort of an odd thing. But he said it is like you said, it's hard to know if you're connecting with them. And showing exhibits, that's a whole thing. But I think to your point, the key is preparation.
And anticipating things in a different way, like what's going to happen. And I mean, to your point about people being in bed, I mean, I think we suffer from an etiquette crisis in this country. So, you know, and, you know, you wouldn't be lying down in the courtroom. Mm-hmm. But there's only so much you can do with that in terms of instructions. And I think hopefully that'll come with time.
Yeah, I think generation by generation, the definition of casual takes on a whole new. I mean, my kids would go to the airport in their pajamas. I mean, with a pillow.
Right. That's right. That's standard for their generation. But you know, as we've seen, I mean, people that, without citing things, although I'm sure you'll know what I'm referring to, you know, people who you would think should know better are taking technology and privacy for granted. And this is, you know, the fact that we are now, and obviously the classic example is the Supreme Court hearing where somebody flushed the toilet. So, you know, we have our Zooms on all the time. We really have to be more mindful of like, I mean, don't do it, but is it on mute? Is the video off? You know, just thinking that through of how it comes off.
Yeah, the whole Jeffrey Toobin fiasco sparked a lot of conversation about, in my mind, I think you're going to see more and more. Well, that was extreme, and that was, let's just enough to dwell on that. But I mean, just the whole idea of the merging of work, your workplace and your home. You know, because after that, people were saying, "Oh my God!" And I said, "Well, get used to it. Not that particular thing, but get used to people." You know, like if you do a search of the web, you can see how many times people are on business calls where they forget that it's on, and in the background is their bathroom, and it's just like waltz into the bathroom thinking nobody can. And it's just like it's going to happen a lot. And I mean, we're used to dogs and babies, and frankly, dogs and babies on a long conference call—they're a treat. You can see everybody's face light up. You're in this call with a
with partners and things, and everybody's just got this serious, you know, kind of grimed getting yeah. through the call. And then suddenly a baby shows up and everyone lights up.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, it is interesting, right? Because it's a question of boundaries, right? And so we, in the before times, as I call them, you went to work, you had your interactions with people and you showed them the self that you wanted to show them. And I think in a lot of good ways, to a certain extent, that it's, you talk about bringing your whole self to work. And I think especially for litigators, we need support. We need emotional support from each other. And it's such a, you advocate for your clients, it can become so adversarial. And that can be difficult sometimes. And I think that's what contributes to stress. And there's a big push towards wellness. But it is actually nice within reason, right? Like you said, you don't want your bathroom door open. I don't want people seeing my bedroom, but it is nice to have that, like, who doesn't like puppies, or being able to see, like, this is what the person's life is. And I think it helps to serve our clients better, both internally within our own firms, that we know each other better. And then also with our adversaries, that you realize that there's a humanity in it. It's not just this boxing match where you're opposed to somebody. So I think that is certainly for the better.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll get there. I think with a lot of things, it's going to be, a matter of balance, because clearly, as you pointed out, traveling to a 10-minute hearing, I mean, what a giant waste of time. I haven't commuted in years and years, but there were times, I'm on the East Coast too, and there were days where my commute was 3 hours because of snow. And I had, I was in my 20s or 30s, and, I had a managing editor and a publisher, and, you had to show that you were coming into work. In the meantime, you're trying not to veer off into a ditch. And then you get there and you spend a few hours, you're all stressed out, and then you do it again. I think.
Yeah. And there's a lot of things like that, that, I'll just give an example, but I'm a court examiner, meaning that I review guardian's accounts, right? In, when a guardian is appointed for somebody, and every year you need to get re-sworn in. And so they would have one day and everyone had to come from all these different counties for a swearing in ceremony, which of course is meaningful and it resonates. You're taking the oath. There is something to that, but it also requires 200 lawyers to come from all over, the counties to come in for an hour. And that's time that can be better spent on other matters. So this year, obviously we're doing it virtually. And I hope that that's something that can continue, because that's the kind of efficiency that, that I really hope helps us, improve as a profession.
Okay. And you mentioned your state judge, Janet DeFiore.
Sorry. Yes.
Yeah. And so she is a big fan of technology and obviously keeping things safe. What is going on? Maybe you said this, are courts open now there, and how are people keeping safe in New York?
So since I've written the article, things have changed drastically because the numbers have spiked. Fortunately, New York, it has not spiked as much as in other places, but it is still spiking. We had gone from a place where over the summer we had 400 cases a day statewide in a state of 19 million people. And now we're clocking at about 5,000 a day. I'm sorry. And so now the courts are, I don't believe that they're open for public matters. I believe some of the judges and staff are going in, but as I said, it's changing very rapidly. So I haven't even had a chance to see which are open and which are not. I recently did an oral argument in the appellate division. I had elected to do it in person. And then recently, I think a day or two ago, they just noticed everybody that there will be no more in-person arguments. It will be all virtual. Okay. So that option is no longer there. So I think that's where we're heading. That certainly, I anticipate that through March, it's going to be all virtual. The public schools have closed. It looks to me like they're phasing back down to essential services until the numbers get back under control. And I think that's the right thing to do. And I think in New York, at least in the city, it's not controversial. And particularly among lawyers. I mean, in the beginning of the pandemic, in Brooklyn, there were pictures of packed courtrooms and it was a super spreader event effectively. We didn't have the word for it at the time. And unfortunately a lot of lawyers died because of it. So I think New York City as a whole takes it very seriously. Lawyers certainly take it very seriously. And people have been taking precautions.
Good. Yeah. Well, that's good. I've noticed, you know, talking about working from home, I don't know if you have any thoughts on this, but I'm finding I'm on conference calls with professionals, and maybe more so, maybe because we still haven't achieved complete equality in terms of home, I don't know, and childcare. But it seems like it's often women that are juggling the conference call and children in the background. And I'm sure men are doing that too, but it just two happened to come to mind in the last couple of weeks where this professional is presenting and I can see the children in the back. I can hear them clanking things. And it just seems like what an enormous amount of stress that must be. And I don't know if you're observing that much. Now, maybe lawyers are different, you know, maybe they have the means perhaps for more childcare or something, but I just feel like I'm seeing a lot of people stressed out. You can see it on their faces. They want to present them their best selves, but, and yet they have those children there and they have to do something because the children are, they're doing kindergarten from home.
It's a real challenge. And I agree it disproportionately affects women, for sure. I think this whole experience has brought to the forefront a lot of the cracks in our systems and our gender expectations. And I think just the uncertainty of it all, people have a varying tolerance for change. And you know, infrastructure matters, whether that's just having a plan, right? We all have a general sense of, okay, our kids go to school, Monday this happens, Thursday they have piano, you know, whatever it is that you need, that fundamental assumption of a structure so that you can go about the rest of your life. And that's been turned on its head. I think it's a lot harder for families with young children. And, you know, I count my blessings with this, that my kids are 10 and 13. So they are a little bit more self-operational. It comes with its own challenges on the other side of that, as I'm sure you can relate. But certainly with the schools, and my kids are in two different types of schools. And, you know, just from day to day it changes. I mean, this past Wednesday in New York, they said, well, tomorrow there's no in-person school. And so you have to be ready to change on a dime. And especially when you're in litigation and you have deadlines and you have to respond to an order to show cause or a preliminary injunction, that's not a great situation. So all of that is like the perfect storm. I think, you know, you'd mentioned the matrimonial attorneys being busy. It's a challenging time. You know, I can say for myself, my husband has been great, and it really, we've had a good, good communication with division of labor. That's not to say that it's not without its stresses and its problems, but, you know, I think it's an enormous burden on people. And I'm hoping that lawyers as professionals are finding, you know, creative outlets and, ways to relieve their stress, because the normal places we went to are no longer available to us, right? Spas are closed. So that's not great. You can't go to a boxing class. So that's not great. So, you know, I think it requires some real deep dives for everybody to find out, you know, what resources they have to just not get mired into it.
Yeah. But I think you're right about this is putting stresses and is revealing cracks in a lot of aspects of our society, everything from childcare and families to the Constitution.
That's right.
Things we thought were all...
Hashtag 2020. There are silver linings in that, though. I think at the end of the day, but again, it pertains to the court system, to how we practice, to how we help our clients. I am hoping that the silver lining in that is that we take those lessons and we do something with it. Not that we just say, you know, when people talk about going back to normal, I don't think there ever will be a return to normal. And I hope that there's not. I hope that there's a return to better, that, you know, that we can patch up those cracks so we don't have to have this kind of sustained stress.
Yeah. I think that's a good spot to end on an optimistic note. It's like, it will make us stronger. Damn it.
That's my hope. Onward.
All right. Well, Allison, thank you very much for talking to me.
Thank you so much for having me. I've enjoyed our conversation.
Well, I didn't realize how much I laughed at myself. Maybe I have been spending a little too much time alone. That brings it to an end, my interview with attorney Allison Bissander.
in it's based on her article that's coming out in the Emerging Journal of Litigation Issues. It's not called that, Tom. It's called the Emerging, no, it's called the Journal on Emerging Issues in Litigation. Get it straight. And the article title is Crisis is the Mother of Change, How a Pandemic Sparked Progress in Courtroom Efficiency. And yeah, let's hope that continues. It's going to have to. Allison is, let's see. Yeah, I had this right in front of me. I could wing it, but then I would most definitely get it wrong. Allison is a partner in the Manhattan office of Getz Fitzpatrick, LLP. And Allison concentrates on commercial litigation, guardianships, and estate litigation and surrogates court. I really appreciated her taking the time to write the article and to spend time speaking with me about it. Once again, that article is going to be on the journal, in the Journal on Emerging Issues in Litigation, coming out in January 2021, a year that can't get here soon enough for many reasons. And as I said, the Journal is a collaboration between my company, HB Litigation Conferences, and that up-and-coming, I don't know if they're just up-and-coming, the hot new research platform, Fastcase, and Law Street Media. They've also got Docket Alarm and Judicata, and it's exciting watching them grow and being a small part of whatever it is they're doing. That is that. Once again, this is Tom Hagee with HB on the Emerging Issues in Litigation podcast. Thanks for listening today.